The intention behind leading the Lad Way is to create a safe space to relate, release, and recharge our passion for people, remembering that diversity and inclusion are critical components to our shared humanity and our ability to help transform lives.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the latest episode of my Critical Reflections podcast, but more importantly, in particular this case, we are looking at episode 2 of Leading the Lad Way. I'm an employee of Lad. I work for the Over the Rhino International Film Festival. And as your host for this conversation, I am excited to have the opportunity to engage in conversation with other Lad employees to find out a little bit about their experiences working at Lad, how they see the organization's role in the community, and more importantly, kind of how they see their own role in the community in which we live. So I'm excited to have Nick Wurstel join me for today's second episode, again, of Leading the Lad Way. And I am going to turn things over to Nick to allow them to have the opportunity to kind of introduce themselves a little bit as we get started. So Nick, take the floor.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. My name is Nick Wurstel, as just introduced. I have been working for Lad for about 3 years now. I've been working, you know, on the ground floor, you know, working directly with individuals. Some of my background is I have a bachelor's in sociology from the University of Cincinnati with a minor of women, gender, and sexuality studies. You know, when I started at Lad, I was just a DSP, and I've kind of, you know, worked my way up to a lead DSP, and then now I'm a coordinator in Lad's community supported living section. So I work, you know, out in different neighborhoods and different communities with people directly in their homes and in some of Lad's what they call the forever homes, which is really cool.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to dive right in. Just again, this is my opportunity. And for those of you who are listening to this and have listened to other podcasts, you probably have recognized that I know the guests that I have on. So this is kind of an interesting first because I don't really know Nick that well. So this is going to be an opportunity for us to get to know each other along the way. So I want to find out, first of all, you mentioned you went to UC and I'm curious, are you originally from Cincinnati?
No, I'm not originally from Cincinnati. I'm sort of kind of like a transplant, I guess you could say. You know, I grew up in a small town called Marietta, Ohio. Okay. So that's like directly 4 hours east from Cincinnati across the state. Mm-hmm. But my sister, who's 7 years older than me, she went to Cincinnati. You know, she attended DAP. And so when I was in high school, she would let me spend the summers with her. And I just kind of fell in love with Cincinnati from there. And so when it was time for me to go to college, you know, Cincinnati was definitely top on my list. So I kind of followed through, and now most of our family lives in Cincinnati.
Okay. All right. So yeah, and I'm actually not from Cincinnati either, although I'm a little further away. I'm originally from North Carolina. But I moved here about 21 years ago from Philadelphia. So I might as well say that I'm from here now because I've actually almost lived here longer than I've lived anywhere else. So yeah, this has become home in a way. And I love how Cincinnati kind of pulls you in like that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So I guess my next question is, did you start working either at Lad or in the field directly out of college, or again, what was your kind of progression from college into the work world?
Yeah, so like during college, I was working at a restaurant, at a sandwich shop, and kind of right out of college, you know, I went through the motions. I went and, you know, applied to a bunch of different places. You know, you apply to like 30, you only hear back from 2. Unfortunately the 2 that I had heard back from, they couldn't hire me yet because I hadn't actually graduated. I had just kind of like jumped the gun a little bit. So, and they needed an immediate placement. So I was kind of like, oh, okay, I understand. But so I was kind of like, I was kind of, I wouldn't say stuck. I was kind of just like in the same chapter of my life at this restaurant sandwich shop for a while. And then, I had a friend that worked in one of the apartment buildings in Guyer that Lad owns and runs. And he was just like, hey, you know what? Like, I know you've been kind of tired of making sandwiches every day. I think you'd be really good at, working at Lad. Here's their website. Just check it out. And I was like, okay, I'll give it a check out. And, I went through and I just found myself like diving into every single piece of media that they had or every, like I even read their strategic plan, which totally is like unnecessary. Like, but the document was there on the website. And so I was like, oh, okay, I'm just going to read it. I'm going to see what it's about. And I feel like when you're starting to work with nonprofits and things like that, like, I think it's really important that you do that digging and you really familiarize yourself with, what their goals are, what are they striving to achieve? And so I really did fall in love with Lad, and I took a shot at it. Sociology, I do love learning about people and talking to people and getting to know, how their lives intersect with other people and their identities. Like, that's something that I definitely like, which can most certainly fall in to the category of being a DSP, but I never came from a caregiving background or anything like that. So I was pretty nervous when I first started, not knowing if I was, up to par for it, but, it just kind of fell into my lap, and I guess I kind of fell into its lap too. And I've been enjoying it, ever since.
Okay. Yeah. That's kind of interesting. Cause I'm fascinated by other people's stories, because in a lot of ways, my connection with Lad, people look at it and think, okay, yeah, you came on as a programmer for the film festival. But I actually have a background working as an employment training specialist for people with disabilities when I was in Philly. That's literally what I did fresh out of college back in 91. And in much the same way, I feel like I had a similar kind of path to you. I graduated, didn't necessarily know what I wanted to do, but I had a business degree, and it was right around the time of the ADA coming out. And there was this real push within the industry to kind of say, well, hey, are there ways to, find opportunities to support people with disabilities in the community and across all facets of community life? So employment was a big piece of that. And, I kind of looked at it thinking, well, hey, I can use this business degree that I have to go in to talk to businesses to say, hey, we have a program here that we can have a collaboration here where I can work with you to learn a job. And then I can bring someone in with a disability and teach them that job. And you don't necessarily have to pay for me being there. So you're going to basically get two employees for the price of one while we're training the person that I bring in to get them up to speed. And it just felt like a natural, easy kind of, decision to say, well, yeah, I can speak the language of business and then help to use that to bridge the social service world into that new situation. So I did the same thing. Yeah, I did a lot of research for the company that I started working for at the time. And you're right, it's fascinating that those organizations and a lot of not service nonprofits put as much information about themselves out there as they can, because they want people to it's kind of the full disclosure, the transparency and all that. It's always been there. And it's helpful for someone come in to say, well, hey, now I understand what this organization is all about and what they're trying to do, and I'm going to be all in for this. So I think that's an opportunity that you see in the nonprofit world that you don't necessarily always see in the for-profit landscape.
It's true. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to switch gears a little bit here. We've talked business a little bit. I'm going to get into you know, the business that I love and care about here, which is film. So I'm kind of curious, what do you like? What are you watching right now? Let's use those questions to kind of kick off this next phase.
I like a lot of, I try to get into a lot of, like watching a lot of the newer series that are out on like streaming services about like suspense or horror. I really like that. Okay. One that's kind of up on my list that I really want to watch that it seems pretty popular right now is called Squid Games on Netflix. Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm very interested in the, you know, the idea of, you know, the battle royale style of, you know, mm-hmm. death games genre, but especially with the added part of, you know, like social commentary on, mm-hmm. You know, socioeconomic backgrounds and, you know, and capitalism and things like that. So I really want to watch that and get into that. You know, it kind of like reminds me of like, you know, if Battle Royale, which is a Japanese film, mm-hmm. And like Parasite, like kind yes. of like came together and like, I made like a TV series about it. And I think the origin of it, is really interesting too, that, you know, the producer, the guy who was really, you know, pushing it, trying to get it started and off the ground, like he went to so many different places first and people turned it down, said it didn't sound interesting. And but he kept going and he wasn't going to sell his idea to anybody else. And finally, you know, he approached Netflix and they loved it. And so, you know, mm-hmm. it's kind of like an underdog story of how that series came to be. So I really like that too as well. So that's something, yeah, Squid Games is something that I want to watch. I think recently I just watched Fear Street that was on, that was on Netflix. That was pretty good. Pretty cool. I liked that. And then, you know, other than that, like when I'm like really busy and I'm just like trying to do a lot of, like a lot of work at home, I'll just kind of turn on the TV and I'll turn on like that comfort show, and just have it playing in the background. And mm-hmm. and right now that comfort show for me is Bob's Burgers. Okay. I wouldn't really say like adult cartoons, but you know something that that has a little bit more like mature humor and stuff in it. I also recently just finished rewatching King of the Hill, which okay. is like an older one, but like, I don't know. I just like, it's kind of like a nostalgia thing for me. Like I remember just kind of like growing up watching King of the Hill and like, you know, just like cracking up about it. So that's something that I like to kind of put on in the background when, you know, I'm trying to focus on something else, but I just need some sound.
Okay. All right. That's funny. Cause yeah, I kind of go that route for like dinner time watching. If I'm, and I've, my wife and I have figured out like the perfect kind of scenario for us. Like we've realized you shouldn't watch cooking shows if you aren't eating, because they're going to make you hungry. But yeah. if you watch them while you're eating, you're kind of like, okay, well, yeah, we're killing two birds with one stone. That's kind of like my, yeah, I'll have that on while I'm eating. And it's an easy way to kind of like enjoy the visual experience of the food, but then also taking it in all at the same time. But I love what you had to say about Squid Games, because I haven't watched Squid Games either. And again, that's one of those weird cultural spots, those empty spots that I have at the moment, because I cover so much film and television on Fox 19 and on my blog that I haven't gotten around to watching that yet. But I feel like you, I'm kind of curious about the dynamic, and you know, your kind of description of it fits everything that I've read so far. And again, everything that I'm interested in with it too, that idea of taking Parasite and Battle Royale and kind of marrying those two up. And again, that social commentary piece is really, it is going to be really fascinating. And my only concern about it is I hope that we don't necessarily get to the stage where that we're going to have like a US remake of it or something like that. I want to just like allow it to be within the culture that we're getting it from and give us an opportunity to kind of see and learn a little bit more about that culture within itself, instead of trying to say, well, yeah, let's just try to reconvert it into what's going to be most familiar to, you know, an American or a Western audience.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, I, you know, there's sometimes when like remakes are like if it's like an old movie, you know, and then they remake it with like some new graphics and stuff, like that's cool, that's a cool take on it. But you know, when it's coming from, you know, a different culture, and they just want to kind of remake it in order to spin it to like a Western audience, you know, like I don't necessarily see that's, you know, that's needed, you know. Mm-hmm. I think that you can really take a piece of film, a piece of work for what it is and get that message across. And it's just as good as it was the first time around.
Right.
So yeah, I'm also hoping that too, that people don't, you know, see the success of Squid Games and like, oh, let's make an American version of it or whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like I said, I find that's kind of an interesting point in terms of how we look at representation and intersectionality as well, because that is definitely a big push right now, and it's a needed and recommended kind of focus to say, well, wait a minute, there are people and groups within our society that aren't necessarily given the opportunity to see themselves. So yes, there should be a focus on that, but there should also, from that broader, almost global perspective, of being able to say, well, wait a minute, yeah, there are these other cultures around the world that we don't know about as well. So why don't we find out, let's get these shows or these films or whatever they are that will give us a chance to see other people's experiences. And we don't necessarily have to try to say, well, okay, that I can't relate to that experience unless you make it look like me. Or you posit it within my culture. We need to see that there are kind of two sides to that dynamic, that are two really important sides to that dynamic that we need to focus on.
Right. Yeah. I think a lot of people, they, you know, you kind of touched on like, it doesn't look like me, or it doesn't look like my culture, but like, you know, it's good to be able to see something from a different culture and recognize the similarities within your own and be like, okay, this is, you know, this isn't just like a problem in Korea. Like this is like a problem across the world. Like, you know, like people all over like struggle with, you know, poverty and you know, and financial insecurities and stuff like that. So it's like, it just may look different, you know, depending upon, you know, where you're from, but yeah, I totally agree that it's important to kind of have those pieces and really highlight the intersectionality of it and be able to kind of take it for what it is.
Mm-hmm. So I have a question for you that's going to kind of bring it back to LAD a little bit here, but still keeping this idea of representation as part of the dynamic. How has your experience working with LAD kind of shape the way that you see that the world as a whole, and again, in particular, how people with disabilities are able to navigate through the world?
It's definitely kind of like, I mean, I guess like maybe like open my eyes a little bit to it. I mean, it's always been there. You know, I have, you know, many friends that are, you know, disability advocates and things like that. So I've always been kind of up to date on like what's going on and how, you know, things could be more accessible for people. But I guess it's really brought it to the forefront because it's something that I'm going through every single day. You know, I won't even be at work and I'll just be thinking about something. I'll be going to a restaurant and I'll be like, oh, you know what? Like I bet so-and-so would really love this place. Oh, but you got to go up like a flight of stairs to get to it. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, or, or especially when it comes around to like voting times and things like that, like, you know, the way that we structure our voting and stuff like that is super inaccessible for people with disabilities. As far as like having very clear and understandable language, you know, I kind of joke around and I say like, yeah, they intentionally make it confusing, but sometimes it's not necessarily a joke, you know? You're starting to work for LAD, you know, it's kind of like just something that I see every single day. I'm always thinking about the individuals I work with and you know, they're always on my mind, and, you know, I try to see the world kind of through their experiences to the best that I can. Mm-hmm. But I think what I really love the most is actually being with them and, you know, seeing how they go through the world themselves and being able to kind of take the back seat, you know, when they're navigating through social things, or, you know, like there's been times where, you know, I still like, I'll take them to like an appointment or something, or like they're going to go get their haircut, and pretty much I'm just there to give them a ride. You know, they know how to, mm-hmm. you know, they know how to say what kind of haircut they want or what they want it to look like. And they can, you know, express that to, you know, the stylist, but the stylist will still look at me for confirmation. And I'm just kind of looking at that person like, I don't know, like, I don't know what this person wants for their haircut. Like, I don't get many haircuts myself, so I don't really, you know, I was like, don't look at me. Like, I'm just hanging out, you know? But I try to bring that kind of lightness to it, that, you know, of being like, yeah, I'm just hanging out, you know, to try not to make the individuals I work with, to make them feel more comfortable and being able to be a little more assertive. You know, they know that I'm there. They know that I've got their back, but I'm not going to try to step on their toes to make sure that they get what they want, you know, because I trust them. I know that they can say what they want, you know, right. And it's just, you know, so sometimes I do have to kind of, you know, I do have to, I'm a very big helper. I like to help a lot, you know, like if I see that like someone hasn't done their dishes yet today, I'll be like, hey, like, while you do this thing, do you want me to help you with your dishes? You know, I'm trying to always like stay busy, but, I do have to kind of rein it in a little bit and be like, no, like that's their goal for them to be independent, to keep up on these things. Nobody's coming into my house asking if they can wash my dishes. Like, you know, so sometimes I do have to kind of, you know, pull back a little bit and be like, okay, like, hey, I see that these things aren't done yet. You know, what can we do? You know, maybe I can offer them like some time management, like advice, or, you know, help them sit down and make a plan for the afternoon. Say, okay, I see that XYZ needs to be done. Like, let's make a plan together. That way I'm not doing the things for them, but right. I'm kind of helping them initiate doing them themselves. So I definitely have to find a balance in, you know, wanting to be a helper and be a good friend, but also serve a purpose as someone that's helping them maintain their independence and their skills.
Right. You know, and I think there's a fascinating distinction in there, in the idea of, you're right, when you're helping someone in their home, that helper role is different because, you know, there are goals in place that are going to, again, focus on independence and allowing people to make their own choices and decisions about what they need to do. But I feel like it's a little different. And you pointed it out in that great example of like, yeah, going to get, you know, get your hair cut. And you happen to be there with the person. And it almost feels like, to a certain extent, it's probably better if you could be invisible in that public situation. Because again, you're right. It's, you know, the barber, or whoever whoever that person is in whatever situation that you find yourself in, it's ultimately just about the person that you're supporting is there to make a decision, a choice, or do something that they want to do. And you don't necessarily have to be involved in that. You know, it's going to be their decision, their choice, and you just happen to be hanging out with them. It's kind of the same way, I guess, if the two of us were to walk into a barber shop together, like if you were to come with me to my barber, and when I go to get my hair cut, you know, my barber's not necessarily going to look at you and say, well, hey, is this all right that he wants his fade? You know, so yeah, that, and again, I'm not sure that invisibility is exactly it, but again, it should just be that you just happen to be there. And yeah, we don't necessarily need your opinion or feedback about it, but people are going to end up kind of asking for it anyway. So that's an issue.
Yeah. And in those situations, I kind of, you know, I kind of turn it around and they'll be like, oh, well, like, what do you think about this? I'm like, well, you know what? I don't know. Like, hey, like Joe, what do you think about it? You know? And I'll ask the individual, like, what do you think about it? And kind of like turn their questions to the individual. And then, you know, and, you know, there is like a, there's like a couple of different, you know, like, you know, like, salons and hair places that if we used to be able to frequent them before the pandemic, that, you know, I could see that because the individuals were regulars there and I was able to kind of turn the questions around to ask the individual that, you know, the stylists there, they were able to pick up on that. And they were like, okay, like this guy is just hanging out. Like he's not going to give me his opinion. So his opinion probably doesn't matter. I'm going to ask this person that I'm actually cutting the hair of. And they were able to kind of make that relationship and it was really good. But so it's nice to see when, you know, when those gradual steps can actually create change. But like I said, you know, the pandemic kind of threw a wrench into that. And so now we're going to a different place and the process starts all over again. And it's not ever something that, I mean, sometimes it just depends on the level of how, I guess, how, you know, if we're going to talk about being invisible, how visible people want to see me as, you know, in the interactions, you know, with, you know, the people we serve, you know, sometimes I do get kind of annoyed or irked, my opinion doesn't matter, you know, you know, or they're just like, you know, really just like ignoring the individual. Then like, I do kind of, you know, I do kind of get annoyed with that, but I never get tired of trying to get it to be like a teaching moment for everyone, you know, cause it's like, you know, cause I had to kind of like imagine myself like, well, when you go through school, you know, to be, you know, a hairdresser or a barber or something like that, they probably don't have anything in their curriculum or in their lesson plans about working with people with disabilities. So they may not know, like, you know, what to do in this situation. So, you know, they're probably just gonna, you know, they probably are gonna look to whoever their staff person is or their caretaker or caregiver. A lot of people try to say caretaker and I'm like, no, I give them care. But really, I'm just a friend. Like, I'm just a friend, you know, is what I tell people. You know, so I try, you know, I have a lot of patience with trying to turn it into like a learning situation for everybody and you know, and try to be like, you know, because if I can teach this person how to interact with people that are different than them, then hopefully the idea is that they can turn around and teach a couple other people. Then they can teach a couple other people, you know? So, you know, I really do try to have patience with people, you know, that don't necessarily, you know, get it right off the bat, you know?
Right. No, that makes a lot of sense. And I'm wondering, and I feel like I go through this a lot as you look at sort of the idea of intersectionality within different groups and generally marginalized groups that are kind of making their way through the world. You know, there are moments when I look back as a person of color and have seen instances where someone hasn't necessarily seen me or, you know, wanted to speak directly to me about whatever I might be dealing with them with in that particular moment. And I kind of use that as the lens to say, okay, well, yeah, this is how people have either seen or not seen me as the person that I need to be in that situation. And it helps me then kind of shift that over to other groups. And I'm kind of wondering, have there been situations for you like that where you haven't necessarily felt particularly seen and acknowledged in that way? And how have you handled those situations?
Yeah, there's probably quite a handful of situations. I think one thing that just like always comes to mind, like right off the bat when I think about not being seen is, when seeing doctors and things like that for mental health, especially when I was younger, even though I was 21, you know, this doctor would still refer, you know, to my parents and talk to my parents about things, or, you know, be like, well, like I see you're kind of in crisis right now. Like I'm going to call your mom. And I'm like, my mom's 4 hours away. That's not going to help me. You're just going to stress her out, you know,
right.
She can't be here immediately. So there's definitely been a situation, you know, where I was, you know, I was just seeking some help for some mental health things. And the doctor just like, didn't see me, didn't hear me. I was really trying to, put words to what I was feeling with a healthcare professional for the first time ever. Which is kind of hard even to begin with, you know, where do you start with describing your mental health issues? Right. You know, especially when you're not necessarily like, everyone's upbringing is different, but you know, for me, for mine, it was, you know, I had stuffed a lot of that, you know, I just kind of kept powering through it, you know, keep being positive. Like, you know, and sometimes I just needed someone to be like, yeah, you know what, that really does suck. You know what I mean? Like, instead of someone just always trying to like, get me to see the bright side or whatever, you know, like, I just needed someone to talk to. And, you know, and I was stressed out with school. Like I was, you know, I was struggling to get through school, you know, because of these issues that I was having with my mental health. And I was just like, I just went to my primary care doctor at the time. And I just said, I don't even know where to start. You know, where do I go? What do I do? Who do I talk to? You know, can you give me some guidance? And this primary care doctor that I had pretty much, you know, kind of just, you know, asked me a bunch of, you know, unnecessary questions. He wasn't answering any of my questions, I guess, which was what my biggest problem was. So I was like kind of frustrated and then he wanted to call my parents. And I said, well, I don't see why that would help me answer my questions. And then he tried to dig into why I didn't want to call my parents and was there something deeper? And, you know, and I was just kind of like, wow, it almost made me like regret opening up to this doctor about needing help, you know, which, you know, so, you know, and then it just kind of went downhill from there. And, but luckily, you know, I was able to find the support that I needed, just not from that doctor and not right. from, you know, that group of professionals, but, you know, I was able to find the help I needed. But yeah, it was, you know, I definitely, you know, do and can relate to like what it's been like to, you know, try to, I mean, not stick up for myself, but try to be more personal, be more independent and being able to say, hey, this situation's going on in my life and I want it, I want to better it, and just kind of have it, you know, be talked to at a brick wall, you know?
Right. Right. You know, and it's kind of interesting because I'm taking a little bit from what you were talking about earlier with, you know, the salon or the barbershop kind of situation, and even looking at it from, you know, the standpoint of the medical profession with seeking mental health support. Like in each of those cases, what it kind of boils down to is you're looking at the idea that there's probably not, maybe there's not an adequate sense of training and being able to deal with individuals in crisis, or whether it doesn't even have to be crisis. Because again, that first situation, it's not about a crisis at all. It's just, I just want to get a haircut, or I want to get, you know, a bite to eat if I'm in a restaurant. But the people working in those places may not necessarily be as comfortable or familiar with having real one-on-one interactions with people. But you would expect that something, you'd expect something different on the medical side of the professional side. You think that, okay, there would be some support, there'd be training on that side, but you still have the same kinds of issues in both scenarios. And it's, I mean, it's, that's a hugely frustrating thing. Like how can we have a world where, you know, whether you're going in for, like I said, a meal or a haircut, or you're going in for, you know, medical support, and you still can't get, you know, you can't get that interaction that you need.
I think, you know, I think it just, I think maybe that, you know, that doctor like had some kind of training on it, but it wasn't something that, you know, maybe at the time was presented as being like super important, or it was just different. Because, you know, I switched to a completely different provider, you know, completely different hospital, and my new primary care doctor, like, he's great. Like, he always like asks me how I'm doing, and he just like, you know, he does it like this guy just, he just really seemed like he was almost in a panic too, that I like was trying to come for him for help, which like was not comforting. But my new primary care doctor, you know, he's like cool, calm, collected, like he's got it, and really makes me feel comfortable like talking to him. And I think it's just that sometimes trainings and lessons and classes and things like that, just they're not all the same across the board, which can, you know, which can definitely, you know, have some gaps, or, you know, certain things can fall through the crack, and, you know, it definitely makes people feel, you know, unprepared for situations. So I think one of my like personal life goals is just to constantly be learning about something new. And because I think that that's just like really healthy for the brain and for, you know, and to an extent, I think it's also helpful for like, as like people at their very core. Like, I think it's always important that we're learning about things. So I think that's why I do try to have a lot of patience, and I try to do everything I can. You know, if I ever have a difficult situation, I try to make it a learning experience, or I try to teach something, you know, to someone that may not quite know, you know, kind of give people the benefit of the doubt first, you know. But if, you know, they keep going against what I'm trying to talk to them about, then, you know, maybe they're just not a great person, but, but, you know, you're going to get those people out there. But yeah, I mean, that's something that is, that the people that I've worked with at LAD, have really been good about. Before the pandemic, we started doing we called it a healthy relationships class. So it was for individuals and for DSPs as well. So it's like the DSPs would go 1 week, and they would learn about all the criteria of like what the next week lesson plan was going to be. And then the next week we would bring our individuals. And so they would learn about, you know, healthy relationships. They would learn about sex education, which is something that I'm really interested in. That's kind of where my WIGS background comes from. And I was like super excited, like to find that intersection of like, you know, being, you know, a disability advocate, and also, you know, being an advocate for sex education. So I was like really excited. And then like the pandemic came, and we had to like switch to only DSPs being on Zoom calls, because it was like right when Zoom was first a thing, and like, and I think people had a little bit of time trying to get used to it. And so then by the point that they were kind of used to Zoom, they were kind of like uninterested in the topic. And it's just something about, it's something about being able to meet in person and see your peers also talking about the questions that you have and the things you're interested in, and kind of feeling really empowered by it. But it was just so cool that, you know, the health and wellness section of LAD, was, you know, partnering, you know, with, you know, a professor, from Dayton University, you know, that teaches sex education, and they were trying to come up with a curriculum specifically for people with disabilities, you know, specifically with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And I thought that was so helpful. And I really loved being able to be a part of that and learning more about it. And, you know, so I think that is one part about LAD that I really like, is that, that you're always encouraged to keep learning about things. And that way, you know, you can kind of make sure that, that you're teaching everyone equally, and that the training is the same across the board, so that nobody's missing out on anything, or they're not, you know, they're not unprepared for a situation. So yeah, that was really cool. I wish we could get going back to that, but unfortunately we're still kind of in a pandemic. So.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's definitely true that, yeah, the pandemic kind of shifted, you know, the ability for us to kind of move forward on those things. Cause I, you know, it, I hadn't even thought about it until literally you brought it up in this conversation, but like the first couple of years in 2018 and 2019 in the film festival, we had films that focused on sexuality, and whether they were docs or narrative features or whatever, that was an interesting component of the festival that again was an opportunity to offer that representation for people with disabilities to kind of see and explore, you know, sexuality as a part of identity. And it was exciting to have that there. And I just realized that for, you know, the installment that we just had this past summer, we didn't, that wasn't necessary. And again, that doesn't necessarily have to be a focal point of every festival, but I just realized it's like, yeah, that was something that we didn't necessarily, we didn't have films that covered that at all. And yet I also feel like maybe even more so now, we probably needed it, because we've had a whole year and a half where we haven't had the opportunity to be around people, to explore relationships as completely as we were before. That probably means that, yeah, there could have, there's probably an even greater need for that now than there was back in 2018 and 2019. So that's something that I want to make sure, and I'm glad this came up as part of this conversation, because yeah, that's going to be in my head as we're looking at films and getting ready for next year. It's like, okay, yeah, that's something we didn't cover the last year, and it's okay. But yeah, I kind of want to get back to that, because that is a really vital and important piece. That film and having a film festival being a part of LAD, you know, we can explore those kinds of stories and introduce them in a way that it doesn't necessarily have to be as uncomfortable for people, you know, to take a training or to have conversations. You know, the film opens the door for that in a way that, again, yeah, people can then watch it, and then you can talk about it and kind of get into it. And it, again, it's kind of like the icebreaker for that. And yeah, I'm so glad that you just, it's something I hadn't even thought about, like with our programming for 2021, that I was like, wow, that's kind of a hole that we missed out on.
Like I said, I'm, you know, that's something that I'm always like, you know, really trying to push for. And you know, and you know, I do what I can, you know, pretty much any individual that I work with, you know, I just have an open conversation right out the bat with it. I'll be like, you know, like if you have any questions about, you know, like safe sex, or, you know, trying to navigate the internet in safe ways or anything like that, like you can come to me, you can talk to me. And if you don't want to talk to me about it, that is totally okay. Like, you don't have to talk to me about it ever again. But like, but yeah, that's kind of like my icebreaker. But I can see, like, you know, if they're at the film festival and they watch a movie, they can, you know, they can be like, oh yeah, like, you know what, I do have questions about that, or that was a really interesting thing, you know. And then, you know, kind of ask the people that they're with, I mean, especially if they're going with friends, you know, to kind of talk to their friends and stuff about it. Cause, you know, I feel like, especially in, you know, in the disability community, you know, as a whole, but also, like, you know, intellectual and developmental disability, you know, you're really, it's really hammered in that you just don't talk about it. You know, it's inappropriate, you know, but you know, if you can go and see it with your peers and be able to kind of have someone there to talk to it about, or talk about it with someone else, you know, it can be really helpful. So yeah, I love the idea of always having like a movie or something about it that people can watch, and you know, or they may not even have any questions until something happens, you know. And then it's like, you know, and then, you know, that kind of leaves, you know, a whole mess of other questions that, you know, which are important to answer, but also it's like, it might be a little overwhelming at first for someone to kind of learn those things. So having that little gradual icebreaker to kind of, you know, bring the topic up is helpful.
Yeah, it really is. And again, like I said, that's, I feel like this is the part that I get out of these conversations, that, again, it's the opportunity to kind of think about what I do, but to place it within, you know, the full spectrum of what LAD is able to provide and how LAD is able to provide that to the people that we support. So I'm kind of walking away from this like, wow, this is the huge check mark for me to make sure that I push this moving forward. And I know for a fact now that I have this connection with you and we've had this conversation, be on the lookout. I may be calling you or reaching out to you as we get ready for the festival, and make sure that, again, this is something I kind of want to make sure that we can talk about, so that, again, I'm making sure that we're targeting, you know, this issue in a particular way that'll make it so that, again, it will open up those kinds of conversations that you can have, that will, again, make, you know, kind of help that process along. So I want to thank you for that. I want to thank you too, just for the opportunity to kind of sit down with you here, to have this conversation. I'm so grateful for this opportunity. And again, I feel like I've gotten to know yet another person at LAD. So this actually kind of helps to round things out for me as well. So thank you for taking the time with me here. I want to ask real quickly before we go, if you have any questions or ideas for me about this conversation or anything else kind of moving forward.
No, but I mean, I guess, I don't know. I guess I want to know what movies you're looking forward to as far as like horror genre. Like, what are you looking forward to?
Okay. Movie wise, obviously we just had Halloween Kills. This will probably help date our conversation for people that are listening to this, because we're gonna drop this on the podcast in a week or so that tells people a little bit right there. The funny thing is, it's probably not movies right now that are capturing my attention. Again, I do want to see Squid Games too, but my wife and I are watching Midnight Mass right now on Netflix, and we're only a couple of episodes in, and I'm completely loving the idea that it's taken this kind of slow burn approach to whatever's going on. And it's probably also kind of a weird thing too, because I'm Catholic. So I told my wife, as a matter of fact, I think we watched a separate episode last night, and I told her, and she's not Catholic, but I told her, it's like, wow, I feel like I'm like going through, like, you know, this is like going to mass, because there's so much of the ritual of the service that they are incorporating into the show. And it feels much more authentic than it has in any other movie or anything that I've seen. And yet you also know that, again, yeah, there's this other horror or supernatural kind of element to it that you're just kind of waiting as it's teasing you with the idea that it's coming. So in terms of that, I would say, yeah, in another week or so, once I finish it, I can let you know whether it would, the payoff is there. But right now, I'm digging, like I said, I'm digging the slow burn of that, because for me, I'd rather have that than, you know, kind of the slasher and the gore and the stuff that we normally get. I want to be scared psychologically, I think, before I get the blood and gore and all that kind of stuff. So I think Midnight Mass is doing a really good job of that for me right now.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. I've heard really great things about it too. So I think that's my final push to start it. I'll start something new tonight.
All right. Well, here's the deal. Now that we've done that and I've given you that, you definitely have to reach out to me once you watch it, or better yet, maybe we should both watch Squid Games and then maybe come back and circle back and have another one of these conversations on the podcast where we talk about Squid Games. I think I'd be open for that if you would.
Okay. Yeah. That sounds cool. Yeah.
All right. Cool. Well, again, thank you very much for your time. And I want to thank the listeners for tuning into this conversation as well. This is, again, episode 2 of Leading the Lad Way. We have 2 more of these coming up. They're coming out once a month. It'll be another fascinating conversation. And somewhere down the road, be on the lookout, because Nick may be back with me having more conversations about what we've been watching. So tune in for that. But as of right now, I'm going to sign off and let everyone enjoy the rest of their day. So thank you.